Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today I have Michael in studio with me, and we are going to do a Classes of Mail style version of the tentative agreement, where we're going to kind of get into the details and actually read some of what it says in here and try to go more step by step in talking about what we like, what we don't like, and there must be at least one thing in here that we like about the tentative agreement. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see when we get to it. Yeah. So, and Michael, might as well say hello to everybody.
Hi, everyone.
There we go. All right, good enough. That's enough out of you.
I think people have heard enough to know who I am by now.
Yes, yes, indeed. All right, so I'm going to start. This is in anticipation of doing this episode. I had asked around on Facebook and said, hey, where can I find the actual language that's going to be in the new contract? Because this was signed like a month ago, more than a month ago now. And, you know, when it was signed with this new language. That was the whole point of getting this new contract. And yet, still not available. That is wild. That in the futuristic year 2024... we don't have access to that. And so we are going by this summary of the tentative agreement that's on the NALC app, and it was probably in the postal record as well. And, dude, that's some bullshit. Why do you suppose the actual language isn't available to us?
Because maybe somebody don't know what they're doing or afraid to show it to people.
Yeah, I think he doesn't want us to see it. If it was somebody he could hang his hat on, then we'd be able to see it. Now, I did get a message from, hold on, I got to pull this up. Just a sec, let me pause. There we go. From Chris sent me, he went to a rap session where he actually took pictures, because on the screen there was like a PowerPoint that had some of the actual language. And so thank you to Chris for sending that to me. Where possible, I will try to look through this and use some of the actual language. But again, so we know that the actual language is out there. Like on this slide right here, it's in Section 2 work schedules. This must be in Article 8. Because D, it says, full-time employees who are not on an overtime desired list or on the work assignment list shall not be required to work beyond 11 and a half hours of work in a day or 60 hours of work in a service week, and shall not be subject to disciplinary action for ending their tour of duty when these limits on hours of work are reached. And so that's the actual language. At least that's the way they make it look. Go ahead.
So what if they mandate work assignment to do another route? To go past all those hours?
That's a great question, right? Because we're going to... So this is why this episode is important, or why I think it's important. Because in the summary, I know from looking through it that it says that, like, all carriers have the right to end their tour. But this actual language says only people who aren't on the ODL or on work assignment, so only 8-hour carriers have the right to end their tour, and presumably CCAs. So, this bullshit, because the actual language does not comport with what is in the summary. These motherfuckers. All right. So, let's get back to the summary.
Dude. Well, there's that letter that Brian Renfer wrote.
All right.
Saying that the tentative agreement
I'll read it. It's kind of our thing on this podcast. Okay. Dated October 19th, 2024. As we record this, I know I'm going to drop this episode pretty quickly. It's Tuesday, November 26th as we record this. So it's been a month and a week since this has come out. So call it 5.5 weeks since this has come out. This document is a comprehensive summary of the terms of the tentative agreement reached between our union, the National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO, and the United States Postal Service. In accordance with Article 16 of the NALC Constitution, the agreement must be ratified by a mail referendum vote among eligible NALC members. The ratification balloting process will take place over the coming weeks. Over the coming weeks? It's been like 5.5 weeks. Dude, weeks. Okay, well, still not here. So I guess we got more time to analyze this agreement.
Maybe he's
thinking of many weeks. Dude, well, you know... Soon. We'll have it soon. So anyway, the terms of this agreement are not effective unless ratified. Dude, thank goodness for that. Over the next few weeks, we will hold informational wrap sessions for branch leaders to learn about this tentative agreement. Information will also be provided through our digital channels in multiple formats. I encourage all NALC members to read this summary thoroughly and to reach out to your branch officers or National Business Agents office for answers to any questions you may have. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to read this summary thoroughly because that's what we do here.
Now, here's in solidarity.
Oh, yeah. He does say in solidarity. Yeah. Yeah.
Really? Is it really?
So he says.
With a big smile on his face.
Oh, look at that big smile. He's satisfied.
Like screwing us over. He's happy.
Oh, dude. I did a good job, everybody. That's what that smile says. Yeah. All right. So we get down to the summary. And the term runs, it's a 42-month agreement. And I've heard some conspiracies about why it's 42 months instead of any other term. So it's just long enough so that he'll get to start negotiating the next agreement. And it's just short enough that he'll get to start negotiating the next agreement. And it makes so that management doesn't have to give yet another raise.
Well, technically, normally it's 3 years, right? 36 months.
Okay.
So that means if it was 36 months, he'd be negotiating next year already.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so, you know, we don't really want him to negotiate again.
Oh, no, dude. Because, I don't even want him to do the arbitration.
Yeah. So I'm actually happy with that in a sense, but I'm not happy with that because it's 42 months of bullshit.
Okay? Right.
And so.
Annie's having fun. Dude, I think I mentioned this before, but Annie loves Michael so bad. She is absolutely infatuated with Michael when he comes over. All right. So anyway. So, shenanigans.
Yeah. But either way, all I do know is in 2026, summer of 2026, most likely in August of 2026, is when the convention is.
Okay.
That we can vote Brian Renfro out that day. So make sure everybody go to the convention.
I don't think you can vote him out that day. We get ballots, right? And still they get mailed to everybody. I don't think that's the way it works.
See who's running.
Oh, dude. Well, James Henry's going to be running, and that's who has my vote. I'll tell you that much.
But we need to see who else is running. Executive Vice President.
Yeah.
Vice President.
Yeah.
We need to see all those people.
Right.
Okay? And I want to be able to talk to them. Why? Because in your convention,
right,
you can talk to them.
Dude, you know who I talked to recently who's in the CLC is David Grosskopf.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the first people I interviewed on Classes of Mail. And I was the first podcast he was ever on. So that was kind of cool. But dude, he actually called me like a couple weeks ago when we got the results from our election and to talk to me about it and to give me some insights. And what a great dude. Hey, stand-up guy, man. David Grosskopf, hey, props to you, man.
From the stuff that I hear about what he did in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, oh yeah. Man. Fighting against the SNDCs.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
That is so amazing story. I love it.
Yeah. At some point when I get my editing skills down, I have audio from a rap session that Brian Renfro did here back in like April of 2024. And he talked a lot about what the contract was. And he also talked about a bunch of other stuff. One of the things he talked about was SNDCs. And first, he said that like when installations are joined into an SNDC, if there is a receiving installation, an installation that's already in there, or a union rather, that's already in there, that generally that union will be the union over the new clump, unless there's something like functionally wrong with that union. So dude, when that guy got screwed over that, you know, yelled at Renfro at the convention, once again, Renfro going against his own word that he says about how those mergers are going to happen. Dude, and another thing that he said was that with SNDCs, that the post office generally is not, or the union is generally not against them in principle. But if the local calls up national and says, we want to fight this, then national will throw their full support behind fighting the SNDC. I don't think that's the story David Grosskopf would tell. Because according to him, he got no support from National when he fought the SNDC. And this fucking guy, man, frustrating.
So here's the thing about SNDC.
Yep.
Every news that I hear about every SNDC they talk about is that it's a failure. Everything is delayed, and delayed.
Right.
So when you get so many places where they talk about how these SNDCs is failing because of all the delayed mail,
right,
that is a big failure, okay?
Did you hear?
So I don't understand how, as a unit, to support something that's failing.
Right. So I listened to David Grosskopf on Fed Up with Ron Speakman. It was a very long interview. And they talked about SNDCs for a while. And I guess one of the problems is that the infrastructure that's required to make an SNDC work doesn't come online at the same time as the SNDC. And so there's this huge inefficiency that's just built into the way they're brought online. And the moral of the story is it's a mess.
And the biggest mess is that when all the multiple stations get into one building, okay, and so now we have to drive further distance, right?
Oh, yeah.
To get to your route.
Right.
And I'm told by almost every single carrier, they don't change your time for the travel. Right,
they still say it's an 8-hour
route. They still say it's an 8-hour route, dude. And they are told
that doesn't surprise
to
me at
fight
all.
With you to make it 8-hour route.
Okay? That does not surprise
me at all. SNDC has created a more hostile work environment, and our union ain't doing shit.
Dude, what a mess. All right, but look.
Okay.
I know I'm the one who digressed. It's on me, but let's get back to reading this. All right, so we go on to wage increases, which is, of course, our main beef with this contract. And it says, city litter carriers will receive the following wage increases effective November 18th, 2023, 1.3% paid retroactively. Effective November 16th, 2024, 1.3% paid retroactively. And effective November 15th, 2025, 1.3%. So since the last time you and I talked about this, I've been corrected by numerous people. These do not compound. These are 1.3% of whatever our wage is now. And then it's just that increase three times. That's some bullshit, man.
That's approximately $40 a week.
Depending on where you are on the pay chart.
No, yeah. I'm looking at if you're at the max amount.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about $40 a week raise. Okay.
That's so
I mean, geez, that's like $1 a week, $1 an hour raise because you only work 40 hours a week. So that is total crap for the amount of stuff that we've done. Dude. I'm sorry. During COVID, what were we called?
Oh, heroes. Heroes work
essential
here.
Workers, oh, essential too, right? Workers,
too. Yeah. No, my station had a banner that said, heroes work here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a goddamn hero.
Okay. So all these risks that we took with the COVID, where we could catch COVID and die. Well, you know what? Some carriers actually die from COVID, okay? And so all these things happening where we're risking our lives and being more hazardous, and people attacking us at the CBUs now or wherever we're delivering mail a lot more than before. But we're still not good enough to get 1.3% raise.
Well, hey, don't overlook the next part. The COLAs, the cost of living adjustment, which is based on step P, which is what I'm at. And the first COLA, August 26, 2023, $978. Then March 9th, 2024, $353. Then September 7th, 2024, $978. And then so on. And then that is paid out proportionally to the carriers at the lower steps. So I want to clear something up on this, because people talk about that it's like a diet COLA, that not everybody gets the full COLA. And what that means is that not everybody gets the $978, but we get the same percentage increase. So I might get a 2.2% COLA. Michael, what step are you at? Like L? Something like that?
Somewhere
in there. Like,
yeah.
Right. So
almost at max now.
Yeah. So I get like 2.2% increase. Michael also gets a 2.2% increase, but because his wage is lower than mine, he gets a lower dollar amount. Now, apparently, as I hear, the clerk unit doesn't do it that way. If I get a $31 a week raise, Michael would also get a $31 a week raise, which kind of brings those salaries closer together. And that's what people like in the CLC are fighting for, because that it feels more fair, because all of us have these same expenses. And of course, anything that gets more money in the hands of workers is a good thing.
So I want to talk about the cost of living allowance.
Okay.
So I believe our inflation has gone up huge in the last 4 or 5 years.
It feels like this is undercalculated.
And that is so undercalculated, because I'm sorry, other unions have agreed to what, a $50 an hour, $49 an hour, and so forth, because inflation had gotten so high.
Yeah, and wage increases of 30%, 22%, and we get 1.3% and another 2 on the COLA. Like, give me a fucking break.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Yep.
I hear about this a lot, especially a lot of conservatives. They talk about how we're probably going to go into recession, okay? Mm-hmm. And Trump is going to save us. But you know what? I don't care if Trump saves us or not. Is that I believe we are still going to go through recession because everything that goes up must come down. And I believe our inflation just skyrocketed, and I think it's going to come down. Okay.
Okay.
What happens when we go into a recession? Do you think they're going to pay us the COLAs?
No, of course not.
Okay.
And it does say in here in this summary that the future COLAs aren't decided yet. You know, we don't know what those will be. But in the materials that Renfro is passing around, he's got these COLAs figured in the future to make the agreement look even bigger than it is, which is some bullshit.
You know, the best what he could have done was, how about you add it to the percentage of raise instead of putting it as a COLAs?
Dude.
I mean, come on.
Well, okay? I mean, I like that we get cost of living adjustments, but yeah, but to your point,
that's for bonus in case, right. But if we go to recession, we don't get them.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, that's right. Dude. All right. So, city carrier assistants also don't get the COLAs. They get absolutely screwed in this new contract. Now, dude, I went back and listen, like I said, I have audio from when Renfro came here and talked. And I played some of it on an episode like back then that was titled The Rap Session and My Take on Being a Steward or something like that. And I played the portion of audio where I talked to Renfro about what the pay increase is going to be. And I tried to corner him and be like, what is the actual dollar amount that we're looking at? Because to reiterate from what he said back then, he had gone on talking about like, you know, we start in our negotiation, we're like way over here in salary, holding his hand out to one side. And the post office starts and they're way over there on the salary. And then as we meet, we get closer and closer. But as he was describing it, post office kept coming closer and closer to our position, which we now know was complete bullshit. But that's what he was telling us. And so when I got up there and asked him, like, dude, what actual dollar amount are we looking at for new hires? And he wouldn't say an actual number, but he said that it's the amount on table one. So you go and look at the pay chart for table one, and it's like $31 an hour. And so that's what he said would be the pay for a new hire after management had come over. And he had also talked about how important it was to be able to attract quality candidates. And we're obviously going to have to pay competitive wages. What the fuck is this? This is nothing like what he said.
I was at the rep session. I heard all that.
Yeah.
And that's why I told all the CCs, I believe he's going to work on getting $31 an hour for all CCs.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was telling
them. Stick with it.
Because this is what he said at the rep session. Yeah. So I told that to all the CCAs.
Dude.
And then you get the TA, our tenant agreement, it's still $20 an hour.
Yeah.
Some bullshit. And so even the CCAs who I've been telling them it was going to be 31, they're all pissed now.
Oh, dude, of course.
Okay. So you tell us one thing and don't do it. This is what happens.
Yeah, that's right. Dude. And I'm so glad I actually have the recording of him saying that shit because it's an absolute fucking lie. Absolutely stood up there and just lied to the people at that rap session. All right, so retroactive back pay. Yes, we will get back pay paid retroactively for all the hours that you worked while the contract was expired.
Okay, I think we can probably skip right over to CCAs.
Yeah, I just talked about that. Well, I didn't go into the details. Yeah, right. So in lieu of a COLA, CCAs get an additional 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Increase on the effective dates of the general wage increase. So instead of 1.3%, they get 2.3%. But no COLA.
What's 2.3% of $19?
It's about 40 cents.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not much, is it?
No, that is not much.
Mm-hmm.
No. 40 cents three times. Yeah, that is an absolute
maybe a dollar,
garbage.
So it goes up to $20
an
hour?
Right. And how are we supposed to attract quality candidates with that? There's no way. No, I mean, and the goal, the dream was like, oh, dude, we're going to go back to doing the civil service exam and we're going to get really good candidates in here. Candidates that were as good as Michael and I were when we applied.
Went based by the points and how you were in seniority, because back then they hired hundreds of CCAs.
Dude, and then we could hire veterans too.
Yeah.
We don't hire shit for veterans anymore.
No, well, I mean, but why veterans want to work for $20 an hour?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, dude, stay in the Army if you want to make that money.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, at least there you get a housing allowance.
So, uniforms.
Yeah, oh, another absolute fucking disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, totally. So, in fairness to Renfro, when he was at our rap session, he said that, like, you know, this is a big problem, that it's not something we're going to be able to solve overnight. But everybody realizes that we have this problem and we need to put our carriers in proper uniforms. One of the things that he kicked around was that at least new hires would get like a full uniform set requisition to them. I don't see that on here.
He also talked about maybe looking for new vendors that will be at a lower cost.
Or negotiating with vendors since we're such a big buyer.
Yeah. Nothing.
None of that.
Nothing. And like nothing he actually said at the rep session happened.
Yeah. So the only thing that we gain in here, I mean, we gain a very small amount of money. We get like an extra $40, which buys a shirt. But again, it doesn't come anywhere close to the price increases. You know, the prices are just going to increase even more. And then the big win is that we get to carry over any unused balance to the next year.
The problem with that is that we don't get enough. Mm-hmm. To get enough uniforms. So what, we got to save our clothing allowance to try to get more the following year?
Yeah, because not realistic.
There's not enough money to give out?
Right.
It is dumb. It's totally dumb. How about you give us more money to get the so that people can get enough clothing or uniforms? Because especially CCs who just started. Right. And I know the postal does want to give it to them because if they quit within a few months, you just lost out on their uniform.
Indeed.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the thing is then tell them to bring the uniform back.
Right.
Tell them to bring it back.
Yeah, sure. Sure. And you can always charge, like take it out of their pay if they don't give the uniform back. You know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Obviously, because if they're going to quit within a few months, I say they bring it back and so, you know, with their check. You know, they
can pick up your last check, you got to turn in
your uniform.
Dude, that's the way it was at Little Caesar's Pizza.
Then we'll have plenty of uniform for the CC that's starting out.
Yeah, dude.
Right? Some ideas, you know?
What a mess.
It is a bad, bad agreement by what Brian Raffer did. I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah. All right. So we have some MOUs about the employee complement where these essentially stay the same, if I remember right, where we're going to have a certain percentage of PTFs. We're going to have a certain number of CCAs. And I don't think... I don't think any of this really changes.
No, MOU full-time regular opportunities.
Okay. What's different about that one?
Well, it says the MOU found in pages 161 through 165, 2019 National Agreement outlines the process for filling full-time opportunities through the conversion of PTFs to full-time, the conversion of CCAs to full-time regular status, and the acceptance of voluntary transfer requests. In addition to date changes, new language addresses, several language issues, which arose during 2019 national
language issues. Okay, so it's just clarification.
So CCA is converted to PTF in accordance with the MOU. City carrier assistance conversion to carrier status will count as conversion to full-time when determining the ratio in item 3 of the MOU. Carrier letter carriers, as well as other bargaining employees, may be accepted for transfer under the item 3 in offices with PTFs on the rolls. However, the transfer will report as PTF. PTF who transferred under item 2 will be granted retreat rights before the PTF within an installation are converted to full-time under item 1 unless PTF with retreat rights has less seniority than the PTF in installation.
Again, I don't think this is a change. Like when you transfer, because I read this stuff on Classes in Mail. When you transfer to a new installation, you go to the very bottom of the seniority list. And if that means at the bottom that there's PTFs, then yeah, you transfer, you become a PTF. And that's how that works.
Yeah, well, they're just re-adding that language for the PTF because CCA still exists.
Right. Ah, dude, I didn't even think about that. These motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, yeah. And, God damn it. Yeah, and there was all this talk about eliminating CCAs. Mm-hmm. And then there was talk about, well, maybe it'll only be a year. And, dude, just nothing. Like, what the fuck was he doing during all that time? Why in the world would this take that long? What did he get? Dude, and I heard on another podcast, I'm sorry I don't remember which one, that somebody had asked, like, what do you think you gained during those extra 400 days of negotiation? Like, what are you most proud of that stretching it out got you? And Renfro didn't have an answer.
I don't know, maybe free drinking?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got to stay in a hotel and get locked up.
Yeah, dude, at least you can drink and don't drive, you know?
Yeah. So there's also, this is another one that I don't think is necessarily a good thing. It extends the time that we can hire people as holiday help. So we're just adding to a temporary non-career workforce for a little bit longer.
Yeah, so the holiday carrier assistant that they're talking about, okay? And so I asked the station manager, hey, are you hiring any holiday carriers? And he's like, no, what is that? He didn't even know what that meant. Okay. Dude. And so I said, well, these are holiday carriers that that's in our tenant agreement, but it actually does a memorandum of understanding that says they can have that. And I said, are you guys going to be hiring one? And I think I think they're trying. I think what it is nobody's applying.
Yeah, that is it. Right. Okay. I've talked to people who do the hiring at our installation, and yeah, they're not getting applicants. Yeah.
Who wants to work at $19 an hour to work only 6 weeks?
Dude.
Who does? When you got like Penn Express offering $24 an hour. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
You can work for them and then just quit whenever you feel like, and that could be 6 weeks too.
And when you work at Panda, you actually have a schedule.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They do have a schedule.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something?
No, McDonald's too.
All right. So the health insurance stays the same. Same also for CCAs, the contribution that the post office makes. All right, now we get into overtime. All right. So we have... Article 8, Sections 2, 4, and 5 have been modified significantly to increase overtime protections and provide more opportunities for letter carriers, as well as the introduction of a new pay rate that was previously only achieved through the grievance arbitration procedure. So the last thing, the pay rate that was achieved through the arbitration procedure, will you open the door to let Annie out? The pay rate that was achieved... that essentially just normalizes working beyond the contractual limit. It is no longer a contractual limit if you just normalize and it's not an issue to work beyond it. And that totally fucks the work-life balance. I mean, yeah, I will grant there may be people who want to work 16 hours in a day. But what are we doing to ourselves as a union and as human beings to go ahead and put the stamp of approval on that?
See, so something that's missing is that the we have a arbitration settlement that working till 60 hours and working 12 hours in a day and working 60 hours in a week are absolutes. It actually says that, okay?
Yeah.
And so basically it says that when we reach 60 hours, management is required to send a carrier home, and they also get paid for the working the full day.
Yeah. The real problem here is that the union has been too chicken shit to enforce those provisions.
And so now they're putting in the overtime provision and they're saying, oh, by the way, so if management does make you work past 12 hours or 60 hours in a week, we'll just pay you 50% of your straight pay.
Dude.
That is not right.
Yeah, so you're double time and a half.
So these, I mean, again, these are people that's work assignments and overtime carrier, because obviously 8-hour carriers, they can just say, hell with you, I'm leaving.
Right.
But what, you know, for the work assignment and overtime carriers, but, you know, here's the funny part. They're only were allowed to work past 12 hours during Christmas time. So why didn't they put that language in there?
Yeah,
saying that's they, a great question. Everybody can do that.
So it says here, Section 2 work schedules. A new Section 2D has been added, which provides all full-time carriers. Now, remember back to the beginning of the episode when we read the actual language. Has been provided, which provides all full-time carriers the right to terminate their tour of duty when reaching their respective work hour limits without being subject to disciplinary action. For non-ODL and work assignment carriers, this means they clock out and leave when reaching 11 and a half hours in a workday or 60 hours in a service week. Now, I'm going to go back... where was that? Dadgummit, now I gotta find it again. Yeah, all right.
But you read that.
I read it earlier.
Saying the people that are they can do that are people who did not sign up for holiday and work assignment. So, again, so therefore, the work assignment people, when you mentioned it in the beginning, when you said that they put the slide out, was that the only the people who signed up for the overtime list are the ones that can work past 12, and the people that can actually say, I can go home are the people that's not signed up, okay? And so this thing on the tentative agreement says otherwise. So you have two different languages.
Dude, okay, so I now have the picture pulled up that the dude sent me. Full-time employees who are not on an overtime desired list or on the work assignment list shall not be required to work 11 and a half hours of work in a day or 60 hours of work in a service week. Dude, so what does it say on yours about work assignment?
It says for non-ODL and work assignment carriers, this means that they can clock out and leave when they reach 11 and a half hours. But that's not true because the slide that's showing from the contract says otherwise.
Yeah.
Says that stuff that ODL he's putting and work on
assignment
here
are exempted from
does that not match.
No, it does not match. That is not the way I read this new deed. So
when you said that, when we haven't gotten the full contract yet, that is a problem because our tentative agreement doesn't reflect what's actually in the contract.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. There's more. Dude, maybe we're giving him a bad rap. Let me read the next slide. This is from the JCAM page 8-1. Work hour limits. So this is supposed to be the actual language in the contract. Work hour limits. As indicated in section 8.2D, full-time employees who are not on an overtime desired list or on the work assignment list who reach 11.5 hours of work or 60 hours in a week shall not be subject for terminating their tour duty. So again, like overtime carriers, not on the ODL or on... So this only applies to 8-hour carriers. Dude, I did read it right. Mm-hmm. Fuck that. It only applies to 8-hour carriers. Dude, so I'm on work assignment.
But here's what you forget.
Yeah.
They already mandated the 8-hour carriers to work 11.5 hours.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, that's... Dude, that's... All right. There's more. Full-time employees not on the overtime desired list may be required to work overtime only if available employees on the ODL have worked up to 12 hours in a day. Yeah, that's the same as it was before. Employees on the overtime desired list may be required to work up to 12 hours and 60 hours. Oh, here's the change down here. Is they can't work more than 60 hours a day unless they volunteer to work past those limits. And then here, go ahead and read part 3 while I go let the dog back in. Okay, and we're back. And now Annie and Michael are playing, and it's the best. All right, so yeah, dude, that's some bullshit.
Yeah,
what it says in the summary is not the same as what it says in the actual contractual language. Dude, maybe I'm reading this wrong, but I don't think I am. Jeez, Louise.
And then, of course, they added, additionally, a new section 4G has been created, which guarantees pay at the rate of 2.5. And 1.5 times the base hourly straight time rate for all carriers for work beyond 12 hours in a day and 60 hours in a service week.
Yeah. So it's those not are a grievance anymore.
So, yeah. But so again, this is for carriers who volunteer.
Who volunteer.
Work, okay. Yeah. So previously, grievance would have to be filed for carriers to be provided for the additional pay for provisions of the 12-60-hour work limits. And this will no longer be necessary as the pay rate will now be automatically applied when these work hours are exceeded. So. Yeah. So, yeah, that's thankful for the stewards that we get to do less work.
Except that it says that...
It's promoting to management to work those extra hours.
Well, and also, you can only be free from discipline for going home if you're on the 8-hour list. Mm-hmm. So what about 12-hour carriers who don't volunteer and they're asked to work more than 12 hours? What happens there? What is this? Dude. All right. We move on to the new overtime assignments. Yeah. How far are we into this? Oh, dude. All right.
So in section 5, a new opportunity has been created for ODL carriers to volunteer to exceed 12 hours of work in a day or 60 hours of work in a service week on a daily case-by-case basis. Carriers cannot be forced to work beyond the applicable work
hour limit. They can volunteer. Okay. All right. Moving on. Okay. Now we get to the new list. 8.5.A. Full-time letter carriers desiring to work overtime shall place their names on one or both of the overtime desired lists or the work assignment list during the 2 weeks prior to start of the quarter. The regular overtime desired list are for employees desiring to work up to 12 hours a day on their regularly scheduled day only, or employees desiring to work 8 hours per day on their non-scheduled days only. However, employees signing both regular and overtime lists are eligible to work up to 12 hours per day on their regularly scheduled day and their non-scheduled days, and effectively are on the same ODL that's been in place forever. There is no longer a 10-hour preference.
Well, that's bullshit. Because here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's where I look at it. Is you're taking away a right for a overtime carrier who wants to work only 10 hours and not 12 hours, okay? I know majority of time that management works it to where you only work 10 hours, because after 10 hours, it's penalty overtime, okay? So, but if the overtime carrier doesn't want to go work past 10 hours, they should be okay. Then it should be a grievance after 10 hours. And now we're just making it where, oh, by the way, unless you want to work only the 8 hours or you can work up to 12 hours, it seems like you're taking away rights from a carrier who'd want to work less than that.
Yeah, it would be nice to at least have that option sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we don't have that anymore. It's another thing. Maybe it's not a big thing, but it's cumulative, and it's just another thing that we've lost. it's another little bit of control over our schedule that we have given back. Okay, there's a couple of things that are maintained from the old schedule to this schedule, or the old contract to this. I don't know why they're even listed in here, because there are no changes. And then we go on to the City Delivery and Workplace Improvement Task Force. And this memorandum recognized the task force for the purpose of jointly seeking methods to improve the cultural and operational environment in city delivery offices. What I want to know is who is on these task forces and what are they doing? Like, what good work is coming out of this task force that we're paying people to, you know, buying their lunch or whatever? What is the point of this? I mean, dude, it seems important. Like, obviously, this is something that needs to be addressed. But what are we getting out of it?
But here's the thing is, who's going to be running the task force? Is that post office or is it the union?
Well, it's a joint.
Okay.
Jointly seeking methods to improve the cultural and operational environment.
Okay.
So it's both, I guess.
Well, the task force will develop the process necessarily to examine conditions, to develop solutions, and to alternative procedures in city delivery offices related to creating a positive work environment culture where everyone is treated with dignity and respect, evaluating workplace culture and developing solutions to address the cause of conflicts between management and city letter carriers efficiently in use of space, staffing, and scheduling, ride evaluation, safety, contractual compliance, and business growth. That's funny. Shouldn't they be doing this anyway?
Well, and the good news, they are.
Okay. So now you have to create a task force to do it? What's the task force? Is the task force going to be like in the city of Las Vegas where you're going to have maybe like, three supervisors and three officers
together? It's a great question. I don't know.
They go around to different stations.
It's our current union officers, no, they're not going to bother doing it. No. Just like they don't bother doing our local labor management meetings.
Yeah. So this already looks like it's going to be a failure when that happens. Okay.
Okay. So we move on to the new employee experience, retention, and mentoring. So this one is a pilot program that's being implemented nationally. And before you leave the Carrier Academy, new carriers are supposed to get contact information for where they're going. So that's good. That obviously was a problem before. I know as a Carrier Academy instructor, that was a problem, that people didn't know where to go or who to call. And even if you got the number for the station, you know what happens when you call that number?
No help.
Yeah, they don't answer. Yeah. Or they don't know what you're talking about, or they don't know who you are if they do answer. Yeah, that is correct. And they get a defined work schedule for the first week in the delivery unit, but that's like your OJI week anyway. You get 3 or 4 days of OJI, and so
One of my recommendations for Carrier Academies is when they send hand out paperwork, maybe they should hand out paperwork or whatever station they're going to, who the stewards are, with their phone numbers.
Oh, that'd be nice, yeah.
That way they know who to contact.
I bet you there's stewards out there who don't give out their phone numbers. I don't know. I give out mine.
If you're going to be a steward, be a steward.
Yeah. If you want my phone number, look on the bathroom wall. It's written right inside the
anybody stall. Wants my phone number, it's 702-724-6355.
All right. Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Michael. So, and you know, people have reached out. Like when you did your episode on the that grievance, that arbitration settlement, people messaged us looking for that settlement. It's helped people. So that's super cool.
And I got carriers from other states call me and ask questions about what the rules are. And I gave them the best answer that I can give them.
Right. Yeah, dude, that's fantastic. You're doing the good work here. Good job, Michael. All right. So the new employees also get a USPS branded reflective vest, mail satchel, and hat because they don't get a fucking uniform. Dude, it's tragic. Next, they get a minimum of one non-scheduled day each service week, except during the penalty exclusion period for employees in their 9th week and beyond. So, one scheduled day off a week. Well, dude, I get 2 scheduled days off a week, but that doesn't mean I'm actually going to be off. And so, that's part of the question of how this is actually going to be enacted is... you can have a scheduled day off, but still be made to work. So does that mean, for example, if they come in on their non-scheduled day, is it automatically overtime? I don't know. Doesn't say that in here. Probably not. Should be. That's what I would argue for if I were in the union, which I am.
Well, one positive thing about it is that if they are not scheduled to have a day off, does that mean we can file a grievance that they need to have 1 day off a week?
Yes, and it should be.
So if they didn't get a day off, but how, should file, be able to file a grievance, and we have to figure something out to remedy that.
Right.
Maybe pay them for a full day's work.
Maybe, because how strict...
Let's try to get CCAs more money, right? Since they're making crap.
Yeah, this is where we need to see the actual language. Mm-hmm. Because how strict is this written? Does it say that CCAs must have a day where they actually don't work? Because again, you can have a non-scheduled day and still work. I work my non-scheduled day when I'm on the overtime list, or sometimes even when I'm not. So what does that really mean? We need that language. All right, next... limited daily and weekly work hours for CCAs and PTFs during their first 11 weeks, and then effective at 12 weeks, they have the 11 and a half work hours per day, which is what's already in the ELM. So what is it limited to during the first 11 weeks, and what happens if management violates it? We don't know, because we haven't seen the language yet. And so let's say that they're limited to 8 hours, just hypothetically. Okay, so what happens if management works them 9 hours? What if management tells them, I need you to go back out? What are they supposed to do? Like, any contract you have is only as good as its enforcement mechanism. What's the enforcement mechanism here? I don't know.
Usually when there's no language, we have to file a grievance and
find settlements. Let the process work it out.
Yeah.
And when I was talking to Fred Woodley of Delivering Solidarity, he asked Renfro a question like that at the Committee of Presidents meeting that he went to, or maybe it was a wrap session, whatever. And that was Renfro's answer. Like, oh, I don't know. We'll have to file grievances and figure it out. Like, well, what the fuck are you negotiating for if you don't think of this stuff and hammer it out? Dude. Okay. Next. Well, go ahead.
I mean, to add to that, I mean, and maybe going a little further for their reviews, maybe this is, could be another way to make sure that the CCs don't get fired within their before their
because you didn't abide period, by their intended work schedule.
Yeah,
yeah, that's reasonable.
So that could be something that we could add on our grievance settlements to keep them on saying, "Hey, management."
Yeah.
Since you're firing them because they don't know how to do this, they don't know how to do this, but maybe because you didn't do a review and how to improve the, how to do their job to get their job back.
Right. Dude, so in the next bullet point, listen to this wiggle language. All CCAs and PTS will receive a defined work schedule identifying anticipated non-scheduled days, start and end times, and route assignments. This schedule will be posted by the close of business on Wednesday of the preceding week. So it's just the regular weekly schedule, which management's supposed to be posting anyway. And I know, like at my station, they just put the CCA for 9:30 all week.
Well, the reason that he's putting that in there is because that has been a problem.
Yeah, of not scheduling properly.
Is,
yeah, it is.
And the thing is, I've been filing this grievance over and over and over and over.
Okay.
To the point where we're starting to pay the CCAs more money and they got stopped. And... but the thing is if they're going to put this as a language means we've been failing at other cities, that they have to put this in the language.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
To make it, try to make it more simplified. Who knows what else they put on the there. So we'll see.
New CCAs, new city letter carriers will get training on Sunday/dynamic delivery. Again, how is this enforced? What constitutes proper training? Is it going to be an on-the-job instructor? How does any of this actually work? We don't know because we don't have the language. To the extent possible, newly hired city carriers will be provided with consistent route assignments. Again, to the extent possible, great. I guess I can file a grievance on that. I mean, I've filed grievances like that where, hey, we're supposed to be trying to do right by these people and we're not doing right. The remedy is usually just like, all right, yeah, we'll try to do right by them. And then, great, a lot of good that does us.
So updated route books and... maps.
Oh, that would
how
help.
How many routes do you know it has updated routes?
Wait, where do you see maps? That? Oh, there it is, the next one. Employees will have access to updated route books and maps and provide reasonable time to review prior to delivering a new route assignment. Dude, that's in the M41, I think.
Yeah. So, because the reason it's in the M41 is because when they wrote that up, there was no navigation.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now here's the thing is that our scanners actually have a navigation that most people probably don't know that it's in
like
there.
The static routes.
Okay. Yeah. And so...
Oh, they have turn-by-turn directions too.
Yeah.
If you listen to my episode, Scanner Features Nobody Told You About.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Because these things are old and they haven't updated anything. They don't explain about what how the scanners are used.
Right.
It's in none of our handbooks and manuals, which we use on Article 19 for handbooks and manuals.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing about that. So because there's nothing about the scanner, they go by what's in the rule books, which is the M41 that says they have to have an updated
map in the route book.
Dude. Okay. And that's the reason why. And I can get 100% guarantee that every station that I have or every route does not have an updated map on any of the routes.
Listen to this one. Yeah. New employees are prohibited from performing work outside of the city letter carrier craft during their first 90 work days or 120 calendar days, whichever comes first. So essentially while they're in probation. So does that mean that outside of that, they are welcome to perform work outside of the city letter carrier craft?
They're not even supposed to be doing clerk craft anyway.
Yeah, they're not supposed to do that anytime. So this is where like the exception proves the rule, where they're putting an exception in here like, oh, during the beginning, you don't have to cross craft. So I guess afterwards,
they can do that after 120 days?
Dude.
What are you saying?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But anyway, you skipped over one part.
Okay.
Says, to the extent possible, newly hired carriers will be provided with consistent route assignments.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, that is the biggest complaint from CCAs.
It is.
They go,
yeah, how do I get good at it?
Hey, I did this route. I'm just barely learning how this route. That route is available the next day, and you give it to another carrier instead, I get another route.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to learn how to do anything if I keep getting a new route? And that is true. Yeah. That management is so dumb at what they're doing at some of the things, route things, that... How about putting the CCAs back on the same route that they did before so they can learn how to do it?
Proficient.
Yeah.
Dude. All right. Hey, we found one that we agree. All right. Hey, good job, union. Yeah, we agree. That is a good idea.
Yeah.
What's the enforcement mechanism? None. Because even in here, it just says to the extent possible.
Mm-hmm.
But dude, even to the extent possible, I can grieve that. Because is it possible to put this carrier on the same route again? Yeah, it's possible. You could totally do it. And yeah. All right. Next, there's a joint workplace and improvement process where people are going to try to get together to improve processes and implementation of improvement plans. And okay, another committee that we're going to pay for that.
Wait, where are you at?
It's the next part down. Joint workplace and improvement.
I think you skipped something.
A mentoring program? Yeah, I skipped that. It's nothing. Like, dude, it's great. I'm in favor of it. I'd like to see CCAs or new employees hooked up with mentors. But, like, there's nothing to that.
A lot of management will not agree to that because they're going to look at it as time-wasting practice. Okay?
Right.
Because the mentoring, how is that going to work? Is it going to have a regular go and show the CCA
that's the way
what
it should
to do?
Be.
Or have the CCA watch what the regular is doing?
But isn't that
all part of training, though?
It is. And on top of that, who gets to decide who the mentors are?
Yeah.
Is it going to be management? They're just going to choose the runner.
The best way to me on this is actually a steward that's available. And then have management have the new employee go see the steward and have the steward show us around.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Or
that would be the best way because already stewards are mentoring people anyway.
Right.
So to me, that would be the best way.
Some sort of certified trainer.
Yeah.
Because what I saw from being a Carrier Academy instructor is I would fill their head with all the rules straight out of the M41 in the academy. And then when they get to their OJI, the OJI is like, okay, now let me show you how we really deliver the mail.
Yeah. So then we get
that's not okay.
And that's where I'm coming from is that Madge will never, ever allow stewards to be their mentors. Here's the reason why. Because we follow all the rules.
That's it.
Right? We're supposed to follow all the rules because if we don't, Madge will try to catch you on and try to find a way to punish you as a steward.
So they don't want a CCA to
learn from
that
a steward.
Yeah,
so they usually find who?
A runner. A runner. That's exactly right.
And so they get taught by a runner how to run the fastest possible and then skip steps. And usually what happens?
They have accidents. They have poor quality delivery.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's all these follow-on problems.
And that's where this mentoring, it sounds great on the paper, but I see a lot of problems because management is going to pull a bunch of stupid crap.
They are.
Okay.
They are. And then again, like what time are they going to allow for this mentoring to take place? Dude. Yep. So the next thing after the joint workplace improvement process. Sorry, we paused for a sec because we realized how long we've been talking. I don't know exactly where we left off, but it's just another committee, the Joint Workplace and Improvement Process.
And it says the local implementation is April 3rd to 2025 to May 2nd, 2020 for 1 month.
Yep.
If the tentative agreement takes a while to get through, then they may change that.
Yeah, we assume that if we go back to renegotiation, then this time frame is going to have to be pushed back. All right, next, route evaluation and adjustment. We go back to the process that is in part two of the M39, except that now some of these line items have less minutes. And to hear Renfro talk about the lower fixed office time, you know, he says that, like, well, if it still takes you 35 minutes, then that's you get credit for all those 35 minutes. But you know damn well this is going to be used as a bludgeon by management to try to cut our office times. And dude, one of the things that Corey's been saying that I hadn't really thought about until he pointed it out is he says, like, I never saw a carrier die from heat in the office. And the working conditions are much better in the office. And so it's
as long as they turn the air conditioning on.
Yeah, as long as they turn the air conditioning on, or the heat for that matter. Mm-hmm. And so it's reasonable for us to want to do whatever we can in the office where we're not suffering to make it easier for us out on the street where we are suffering, where we're in danger from the elements, from the public, from all these different things. And here again, we have given away more of our protection.
So what we're talking about is like line 14, accountables, 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the different offices do different things for accountables, but I do know that it could take more than 2 minutes, okay? Mm-hmm.
And if it does, you'll get credit for it.
Yeah. So for you to put it, just 2 minutes for accountables is ridiculous to make it a standard of 2 minutes when it used to be 5 minutes. So we lost 3 minutes on that.
Yeah. Okay? And it gives away the game of the certified letters in the DPS, which we've won. Those grievances.
And then line 19 for vehicle inspection. I thought the vehicle inspection was 10 minutes, but I could be wrong.
It couldn't have possibly been that long. But 3 minutes seems short.
Yeah. I think it was between 5 to 10 minutes. I think that's basically the language that's said.
I don't know.
The reason for it is that we have a whole list of things that we have to check. Tires.
Yeah.
Left and right turns, and you have to bring an individual with a teammate
with you. Have them look so at they the can look at your vehicle, you and all that.
And then you look at their stuff. That takes more time. So when management is cutting the time down to 3 minutes, what are they doing?
Yeah, they're sacrificing safety.
They're sacrificing safety. So therefore, there could be more accidents could happen because now they're going to say that all it should take is for vehicle inspection is 3 minutes.
I do.
For going to safety.
Because we know now that's going to be used as a standard. Why are you taking 5 minutes to do your vehicle check? You only get 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know damn well management's going to do that. And so once again, giving it away.
Yeah.
Dude. All right.
Personal needs of 5 minutes. Okay, that would be like using the bathroom, doing all these other
things. Yeah, getting your raincoat, stuff like that. Okay. Yep.
And then office work not cover 10 minutes. So if you actually look at it, these are the type of things that we do every day where here it says it takes 20 minutes. Okay. But in reality, all these things, it should take you about 33 minutes. That's where we have the
standard. That's what it used to be, the standard office time. Yeah.
And so he's cutting out all these things, hours for us. And so what's management going to do? Because now when they look at it, it says, hey, it's only 20 minutes. That's extra 13 minutes less. So what happens when you drop 13 minutes for each route?
You lose routes.
Oh, you mean they have to take what? For CBUs, what? That would be average of what? Three?
Dude.
Three CBUs per route?
Yeah, right.
So at a full station,
to your route, and then you lose routes.
So let's say there's 10 routes and you lose three per 10 routes that's in your station, that's 30.
Yeah, if you're on a cupcake route like Michael's, that's your whole route.
So the funny thing, the messed up thing is that he basically agreed to get rid of carriers is what you're looking at here. Okay, he is agreeing to probably eliminate a few hundred carriers.
At least.
Okay, at least.
There's other podcasts that they've done the math on it and how many carriers total are going to lose their jobs
over
this. And
it could be a lot of us.
It's a lot.
Okay, as a union, we should never, ever, ever agree to this because we need more members and not less members.
So
he completely failed us, Brian Renfro completely failed us on this because we will lose carriers.
So I'll tell you something that I think is a really good idea. For routes like mine that are park and loop, there should be a mandate that they have to be switched over to ClusterBox, and you do centralized delivery for those. No, no, wait. Don't. I know you're saying no. Of course, everybody should be saying no, because as a member of the NALC, that is not a good idea. That is not something that the NALC should accept, because it's going to cost jobs. It's going to diminish customer service. It's going to have all these negative follow-on effects.
Because customer service is used to having somebody deliver to their front of their door.
Yeah.
Take that right away. It pisses people off.
Yeah. And it really is part of, like, that's the kind of route that I have. And I know, Michael, you have a ClusterBox route. And, like, I really am part of my community where I deliver the mail. And I get to know people and I see them and I walk with them. And
how many of them open their doors when you approach their door?
Luckily, not too many, because I always worry there's going to be a dog on the other side. Yeah. Okay. I always hope there will be an attractive woman on the other side. That almost never happens. But
really?
Yeah.
I've already had where I had to take the certified to the door and I've had girls drop their towels. So,
dude.
Okay.
You're lucky, man. That's never happened to me. It's tragic, man.
It's because it's in your different area.
It must be. Yeah. Yeah, you're up in in the fancy new neighborhoods. And yeah, I've always delivered in pretty low-income areas. Not that they can't drop their towels just the same.
Yeah.
All right, so anyway.
And they don't care, because you're just a mailman.
Dude, I should be so lucky. One time, I had this certified letter that I had to take to the door. And I was a T6 at the time, so I'm on the route, and it was at an apartment complex, and I go knock, knock, knock on the door, and this beautiful Thai woman answers the door, and she's gorgeous, and she's petite, and she's naked, but she's got this couch cushion that she strategically placed in front of her, and that's all she has, and it's, you know, it's barely covering her up, but dude, it's so sexy, and she is so hot, and I have this, don't skip ahead if you know the punchline, just let it happen. So I have a certified letter that she's got to sign. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait for this, because she's going to have to maneuver to sign for the certified letter. And this is going to be great. And she winds up signing for it and maintains her modesty. And I don't see anything. Well, the next day, when the regular carrier's back on the route, I start telling him what happened. And he goes, wait a minute. Was that apartment 1307? And I said, yeah, how'd you know? And he said, do you know the punchline? This beautiful Thai woman? This beautiful Thai man. Yeah, it was a lady boy.
Well, what I was going to say is that I was telling a story to one of the carriers at one of the old stations, saying, hey, man, I just saw this lady sunbathing naked.
Nice.
And it was some lady who's in her 20s in Sun City. And Sun City in Las Vegas is a
retirement community. Yeah,
it's a retirement community. Yeah.
And she couldn't have been in her 20s.
No, she was in her
20s. Maybe it was a guest.
Because it was a granddaughter.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah.
And she, because nobody really bothers her because she's in a retired community.
Yeah.
So she's sunbathing.
Oh, yeah, sure. Right.
Okay. So I go in there to drop a package off and she sees it. She just waves, you know, and I wave back at her, you know, and so forth. And I'm thinking, wow, that was so awesome. And I'm talking to one of the carriers that, hey, this is what happened. And you know what the other carrier said?
What's that?
Man, how come all I get is elderly ladies?
Oh, dude. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what.
But anyway,
ladyboy.
We're just telling you a little bit light thoughts.
All right. So anyway,
instead of just going continuous with the contract stuff.
Okay, so we go to Article 8.3. So now there's other contractual provisions. Article 2 is just a language change. I don't care about that. Fine.
Yeah.
All part-time flexible and city carrier assistant employees will be, what's that next word?
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed a minimum of one non-scheduled day a week, except during the penalty overtime. Okay, so we already read about this. And okay, guaranteed that it's non-scheduled, but does that actually guarantee that you're going to be off? Because that should be the meaning of non-scheduled.
So as a steward, as you know, because the word guaranteed was used, that they
I
must.
Would fight that. Yeah, and it's the same as must, I would say. Yeah,
so
that they must.
That's how we're going to fight that one.
Yep, I agree. All right, dude. So this is the next one, monetization of annual leave in Article 10. It sounds good in the beginning until you think about it. The new MOU provides career employees the opportunity to sell back up to 40 hours of annual leave prior to the beginning of the year if they're at the maximum and they have used fewer than 75 sick leave hours in the year immediately preceding. So this is another cudgel for management to try to get us to stop calling in sick, to use a benefit that we have earned. That's why that's in there.
Oh, you mean, wait, this is not something that union wants, what management wants?
Dude, I'm sure, obviously Renfro went for it, but this doesn't help us I mean, it's nice to be able to sell back your leave. It doesn't cost the post office anything.
Well, it sounds a lot because it says, oh, fewer than 75 sick hours, right? Yeah. Sick leave hours. What is that? That's less than around 9.5 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
9 days would be 72 hours.
Right.
So nine days and 3 hours.
Yeah. So, you know, we get what, 13 days a year?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's basically saying that, hey, you can only call in sick 4 days a year. So what happens if you get hurt, injured? What happens?
No. 75 hours is 9 days and 3 hours. So you could call in 9 days and still apply for this.
You have to use fewer than 75 hours.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Okay. So if you called in 9 times, that would only be 72 hours. So yeah, you would qualify.
Okay. So... Yeah. Then you can sell up to 40 hours.
Yeah, if you're at the carryover maximum.
Okay.
Yep.
So this is for all carriers, including CCAs?
Oh, well, CCAs aren't going to be at the carryover maximum.
Oh, they don't get sick leave.
Yeah, and they don't get sick leave. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Dude.
PTFs. So,
yeah, not as great as it first sounded. I guess if you've been PTFs. A PTF for a long time. Yeah. Yep.
So.
All right. Next. This one's good. All right. Yay. Credit for this one is CCAs get advanced annual leave. So when they start their next appointment, they will be advanced 40 hours of annual leave. I really like this one because it is so bogus that a CCA who's been there for like a year and a month can't take leave because they haven't earned that next year of leave yet. So good job. Yay union on that one. All right, I guess I'll stay in the union.
Well, the problem with that is that because CCAs don't get paid that much money, and so if they quit, what happens then?
That's a great question. So there are provisions like that in the ELM, and the CCA will have to pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll be...
Do you think they'll pay back if they quit?
It's a good question. I mean, the post office can just take it out of their last check, presumably.
Yeah, but if you don't get enough on the next last paycheck, then...
Yeah, that's the question. Are they going to go after it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fair question. I think post office will not go after it.
The number of CCAs who quit during year two is probably pretty low. I bet most of them, if they haven't quit in the first year, the attrition numbers probably go way down after that. Which is not to say I haven't seen it happen, but it's way less. All right, next, same for PTFs. They get advanced 40 hours of annual leave. Next is bereavement leave. It now is extended to grandchildren. So you can, if a grandchild dies, you can go to their funeral. So that's something. Well, all right.
Why did they add uncles and aunts too? You know that.
I guess they figure people have too many of those, and yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. And so here, the next one is time limitations concerning bone marrow, stem cell, blood platelet, and organ donations. If you listen to my ELM in season 3. I talked about the time that you already get off for that. So I'm curious to see, again, the language to see how that's changed, because that's all covered in the ELM, that you get time off for these type of medical events. So what's different about that? I don't know.
It says it's the new MOU, which we don't know what the new MOU is.
No, we don't.
Defines the amount of administrative leave granted. Okay, yeah. So what amount of time? It doesn't say that either.
That's the question. Yeah, we don't know.
And time limitations, okay, applicable to bone marrow. Okay, what time?
We don't know.
So this tentative agreement it's already in the doesn't ELM. Say anything, but it says it's on the MOU. So it would be better if they put the MOU number so we can look it up.
That would be nice.
That would be nice. Yeah, that would be helpful. It's not in there.
All right, we are almost done. Next, Article 11, holidays, we add Juneteenth. All right, good for that. Yeah,
but we've already added Juneteenth. It's already been agreed upon. In fact, when they agreed upon it, we did not get paid for that one Juneteenth, which still haven't got a settlement on it. What happened to that?
I don't know.
We still don't know.
Juneteenth. Yeah, that's right.
We still didn't get it. They were supposed to give us something. They never said anything about that.
That's a good
So
point,
now that they're saying they're adding up to... How about pay us or give us the annual leave for that day or some kind?
Well, speaking of getting paid not for getting that day.
Because the only thing that we've heard from our branch is it's a national grievance and they're working on it.
Dude.
And we never get an answer.
Great. So, speaking of getting additional pay for that, PTF pay is now changed to reflect the additional holiday. All right, next, Article 12, they take out all the stuff that doesn't apply to city letter carriers. It's about damn time. Sadly, nothing in this agreement about fixing all the commas that are missing in the JCAM. So, oh well. Let's see. Next, it used to be if you were a supervisor for less than 2 years, you keep your seniority. Now it's less than 1 year. If you've been a supervisor for more than a year, you lose all of your seniority. So that's a change. Next, 14, let's see. Joint labor management safety committees at the district level for each of the 50 districts. So that's something we'll do.
Wait. I'm sorry. Go back ahead. To the Article 12.
Yeah.
I'm trying to read that language where it says it's 1 year for supervisors. Does that include 204Bs?
I don't think so, because they have to return even quicker, right?
They lose only... There's no sense in returning quicker.
Oh, yeah. They just lose their routes after 120
days.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay? But it just says supervisor. Doesn't it actually explain what supervisor?
That's a good question. Is it a full-time supervisor, or do 204Bs count for that as well?
Because they're considered supervisors too, right?
They are supervisors, yeah.
So to me, that means if they don't come back to their route within that 1 year,
they lose their seniority.
That sounds like what it is.
I would agree with that, because that's a supervisor. You're going to tell me that's not a supervisor?
Right.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
If this goes in effect, I will definitely be pushing for that.
So do
for all these 204Bs. Can you imagine them losing seniority?
It looks like the only change is just the time period. So mm-hmm. if you look at the current language of 12.2.B,
mm-hmm.
if it applies to 204Bs now, it'll apply to 204Bs when it's only a year.
Yeah. So,
but nobody's a 204B for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it may come up.
Because they may come back down, but they usually come back down to they don't lose their route.
Right.
So they don't ever go over 2 years.
Yeah. All right. So getting back Article 14, now there's more safety
committees. I'm sorry, one more thing.
Yeah, please.
Okay, I know. It's one more thing.
It's fine.
So I'm not talking about the regulars or whatever. I'm talking about allowing CCAs.
Whoa, sorry about that.
CCAs,
everybody.
Or PTF to be 204Bs.
Yeah.
And since they don't have a route,
they don't lose it anyway.
Okay. Yeah, so they don't lose point. It. So they don't come down to carry mail. So if they stay as a 204B for 1 year, they lose their seniority as a PTF. So they can never become a regular.
Oh, wouldn't that be interesting? Yeah, I think they would. Dude. Yeah, I think that's true.
You want to go into management as a PTF, that's what may happen.
Yeah, they're never going to make full-time regular. Unless they made it in less than a year, then they would get it. Because they're not going to get demoted.
Right.
But yeah, dude, that's interesting.
So that's something to think about.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so next. So
that's why I had to mention that.
No, yeah, that's fine. All right, we'll move on to air-conditioned vehicles. Post office make every effort to acquire vehicles equipped with air conditioning. Every effort, that's fine. That's all well and good. It would have been nice to have said must. Mm-hmm. But I guess we can't get that. So good, air conditioning. And the new NGDV has air conditioning. Yeah. So
They were saying where they're...
And they have to keep it maintained,
yeah,
which is critical.
That's because we still have LVs and FFVs and so forth. And they
But all the new ones.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, next.
But they could have made simple things. It says any new vehicles must have air conditioning. They could have done that.
They could have said must. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they didn't. No, we didn't agree to must.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to push that hard. All right,
yeah, because
next.
Because Brian Redford, who cares about safety for all the carriers, since he's sitting on his desk with an air-conditioned office, don't have to worry about it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And
that's who makes these decisions. People sitting at a desk in air-conditioning. Yeah,
so he doesn't care about using the word must on the air-conditioning, while we got some carriers that died from heat now, and that's not that important, right?
Dude. All right, Article
I'm being
15.
So negative, I'm sorry.
That's okay, dude. I get it. I've read this motherfucker too. It's not great. We'll be voting no. So Article 15 is just some task force and experimental processes for like updating and streamlining the grievance process. So we'll see how that works out. That only affects the people involved in that for now. Article 16.7 is amended to allow carriers placed in an off-duty status the right to use their annual leave to offset their non-pay status.
This is bullshit.
Oh, explain, because to me this doesn't sound that bad.
Okay.
Why is it bad?
Let me tell you why it's bullshit.
All right.
So how many times is this going to happen where Matt's going to basically force people to use annual leave, okay, and then they can't take any vacations after because that grievance process is going to take a year.
Right. And so in the meantime, they're out of annual.
In the exactly.
Right. But at least they got
okay. No.
Okay.
Because now your well-being of taking time off 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever that you need to take time off to relax and get back into groove.
It got burned.
You get burned and you cannot use it. And then because you know management.
You have to use your annual leave.
Again.
Right.
If you're not getting paid, what can you do? Okay. In reality, they should have put in the word in there in the 16-7 while they're being worked on. They should be paid it admin leave, not annual leave. Yeah,
administrative leave would have been
because 16-7 is that all basically is that hey, you made an error that of doing a safety violation. That hey, we're letting you know.
Right.
That you violate a safety procedure, that there is a chance that you can get fired later on if you keep violating these rules.
Right.
All of this is a corrective measure, just like all grievances are. All the punishments are discipline. All discipline is it has to be corrective. Right. And because it has to be corrective, they should put on there, because basically, you know, management, all they want to do is make it so they don't get paid. So that'll be your punishment.
Right. So it's painful to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is that they should make it where, put in language that, well, they don't get paid for 1 or 2 days. And then after that, they have to go into admin leave.
Right. Because, so their management doesn't put them on indefinite.
Indefinite.
Because it's supposed to be an emergency.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's how many times that we've failed carriers when management did a 16-7 mm-hmm. where carriers are out because management kept them putting them out and we're trying to file a grievance to get them paid and they're delaying it as long as they can.
It's true.
Yeah, in the meantime, they'll get paid later on
right.
for the time missed. But in the meantime, this carrier's not getting paid. And that's where our union's failing on that, which I talk about that.
Where our union's failing.
Yep. And right here is just... How about just making it so that you know, if you were on an emergency procedure, you could miss up to that amount of hours of pay, no pay. But if you're proven innocent, then you get all the money back, or some language or that. But putting this on here saying you got to use your annual, it's bullshit.
I do.
And to actually put that in there, you should be able to still be a grievance settlement because we don't know the situation. We don't know what will happen because it could be management who's lying.
Oh, dude, usually
how many times
is.
Does that happen?
Right. Okay? Yeah, exactly.
And there are some carriers who make that mistake. Yes, that happens. But how many times have we figured out that management is lying and trying to punish carriers because, they asked for two to drop a handoff, so I'm going to go after them. How many times does that happen?
Too many. Mm-hmm. Way too many. Yep. All right, next, we're down to the last few here. 17.5, Labor Management Committee meetings amended to add a requirement for the local parties to meet at least twice a year to discuss labor management issues. So where we are, it's in our local agreement that they're supposed to meet every month. And then at our smaller offices in Henderson, Boulder City, and North Las Vegas, it's a little bit less often. Our union leadership doesn't do it at all. They finally did one in October, I think, and then probably not again in November. So we're failing in this. But as I understand it, the real problem is in areas with very small offices that this is impractical to set aside this time to meet. I don't know. To me, labor management meetings are a good idea, but there may be reasons why they're not practical to do this frequently.
Well, it doesn't matter that if it's impractical or not. I believe it's very important.
Because, I do too, actually.
They talk about the problems, what's going on at every post office.
Yeah.
Including where, that post office right there, there's bats in the ceiling.
Can you get that fixed, yeah,
please?
Yeah, exactly.
Or, by the way, this manager doesn't know how to stop harassing carriers.
Right.
He's been moved around to a different station, and now he's at a new station, and he's still doing it. You know, so things like that they can bring up. Mm-hmm. To hopefully the postmaster can fix the problem.
Right. The few that we've had in our union have been very productive, that we've gotten good, citable stuff out of those meetings. And it's shameful that they don't do them like they're supposed to. All right. Next, dues. The NALC is taking over dues processing. So that's probably Renfro's biggest accomplishment here is now he gets his dues faster. So that's great. And then Article 23 is the last one.
Are you sure that'll be faster?
According to Renfro, it will be.
Yeah, I don't know because we're taking a lot of responsibility on making sure the process gets paid and so forth.
Yeah, so that means that we get to handle that money instead of the post office. And whenever you're handling large amounts of money, there are opportunities to make money on that money. And that's probably what our business union is interested in. That's my guess.
I don't know, because post offices, to me, does a very good job of making sure that people get paid for the union dues.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it doesn't seem to be a problem the way it's working now. So not that I'm aware.
Why is this put in place?
I think it's so that the union gets to handle more money. That's what I think.
So what if you get somebody
That the way that it was done at times has created allocation errors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like allocation errors? Are you going to come on here in favor of allocation errors?
Well, then you file grievances and so forth. But now do we file grievance against our union for that?
Dude, as somebody who has been in that sort of situation, it ain't easy.
Okay. So that's where I'm saying.
Right.
You know, it's definitely a good thing for our union to do that when post office already know how to do it 99% of the time.
Right.
99.99% of the time. Because how many carriers in the nation?
Yeah, it's a very minor issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, we assume. Okay, and then the last thing is that the union officials have the right to enter postal installations to conduct official business. So, great.
They've always done that.
So there must have been some sort of clarification that was needed or something. All right, and that's it, dude. We did it. We did all of them. So good job, us. Hopefully you guys learned something, got some clarifications, because there is stuff in there that is not
terrible.
Okay. Yeah.
The worst one is losing time.
Oh, the office time?
Bell.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah, that's the worst that's one. A bad one.
We will lose a lot of carriers, and that is a bad thing. Because what you guys don't understand is that, let's say in Las Vegas, let's say we lose 12 routes.
Okay.
Just per se. We lose 12 routes. That's 12 carriers with the low seniority.
Yeah. And two T6s.
And two T6s. So what happens to those carriers who lose their routes?
They become
unassigned regular, right? Yep. For how long?
Until the next bid cycle. Then they have to take a residual posting.
By seniority, right?
Yeah. And those residual postings now don't go to CCAs to move them
or
up.
PTFs.
Or PTFs, to make them full-time regular.
And sometimes how long will that take?
12? Yeah, it could take
12 routes could take a whole year. So that means PTFs and CCs cannot move up for that long.
Right. And there's
or possibly
these,
longer.
Yeah,
because I'm talking about it's only 12, but in Las Vegas we have 17 post offices.
Right.
It could be over 100 routes.
Who knows?
Okay, if it's 100 routes and you got 100 unassigned regulars, means the PTFs and CC will never get promoted. Well, all the CC will become PTFs in 2 years.
Yeah,
and then we'll have a list of PTFs all over the place because...
Yeah, there's no routes to convert them to.
Exactly.
And what's madness about that is that there's plenty of work to be had. You know, we don't have people who aren't getting enough hours. There is full-time work and we're not having full-time people do that work.
Again, I mentioned in another podcast where I looked at the seniorities, we had 1,300 carriers.
Uh-huh.
We have 999.
Wow.
How do we lose over 300 carriers?
I don't know. I haven't followed that.
Well, that's because I know some of the things is where management went on did the full installation route evaluation.
They eliminated routes.
And they eliminated a lot of routes. And that's why we have so many overburdened routes because they got rid of a lot of carriers.
Dude. So does that mean that with our union election that went out to 2,000 members, only 100 or only 1,000 of those are full-time regular carriers?
Yeah. 999 or something like that. Look at your seniority list. You got it, right?
Yeah. I'll have to check that out.
Look at how many regulars there is.
Dude, it's wild.
Now, there's about 180 CCAs,
uh-huh,
and there's about 20 PTFs. So that's about 200, right?
Okay.
So that's a total of 1,200.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Right. But only 1,000 of those are full-time regular carriers. The rest are either retirees or are non-full-time regulars.
All right,
dude. It's been long enough. Yeah, we covered a lot. Thank you guys for listening. And thank you, Michael, for coming over. Dude, I'm so glad I don't have to drive all the way across town at the end of this.
It's like a 40-minute drive.
Yeah. And, dude, you were doing the Lord's work today of checking up on our election, looking for improprieties. So good on that. And we'll keep you guys posted. Thanks for listening. All right.
That was a long,
It's still going. Oh, that's why. Hey, you guys get bonus material.